Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to the A New Day Show, where we focus on the education, the inspiration, and the empowerment of entrepreneurs and small business people. And here at the A New Day Show, we do not take that statement lightly, because we know that in order for entrepreneurs and small business people to be successful, they need to be flourishing and prosperous and be successful in all aspects of their lives. And for that reason, today I have an extremely special guest for you who has been hanging out in the virtual green room with me. And I know we are going to have an amazing show this morning, because last night I was blessed to have the same guest on my local cable TV show, and we rock and we roll, and we know this morning is going to be an amazing show. So again, as usual, I am so thankful for each and every one of you who decide that you will spend this time to listen to the show, either live or via the archive. I want to encourage you to go ahead, mark the show favorite, spread the word to your network so we can get the support of the listeners. And tell us, if there's a special story that you would love to hear, write us and let us know that, and we will do our best in order to find someone who has that story to share. As usual, I welcome your participation, because without your involvement, this show cannot be a success. And for those of you who are able to, please call in 646-915-8166. And we also have an 800 number, 877-598-8549. And the chat room is up. I will do my best to go back and forth. You all know that multitasking is not one of my favorite things to do, but I will do my best to get your involvement. If you have questions and you're in the chat room, please type it. We love when you call in anyhow. So, But for those of you who may be at work and you cannot get on the phone, type your questions and we'll do the best to get my guests to answer that and just to shed some light on whatever it is that you might want to know. Well, I want to let you know that last week I did announce that this Saturday I wanted to start my dreaming room here in Connecticut. Well, unfortunately, there's a slight delay. I still need 9 people in which to conduct this dreaming room. So, if you're out there and you're looking to start a new business, or you have an existing business that you're looking to just catapult to the next level, if you are an avid supporter of Michael E. Gerber's work, then you will want to be involved in the Dreaming Room. So please send me an email or you can call me on the telephone, 203-885-9434. Or you can email me at Daphne@ClarkHudson.com or even here on the radio. You can leave a message and I will communicate with you. Whether you have a business or not, or you're wannabe entrepreneurs, the Dreaming Room is designed for you. So let's talk about that and I can tell you how you can get involved in the Dreaming Room. So I look forward to hearing from you about that. The one thing we do have already confirmed is the location. Because the Dreaming Room is open to the entire state of Connecticut and adjoining states and cities and towns, the location will be at the Heritage Golf and Spa, located in the awesome New England town of Southbury. So that's where we will be conducting it, and it will take place on a Saturday morning between 9 and 12 for 12 weeks. So let me hear from you. You want to make history. This is the first time that the Dreaming Room will be held outside of California, and I am Connecticut's first facilitator for the Origination Dreaming Room, which is created by Michael E. Gerber. So, enough for me on that. I tell you, I am so pumped up about this morning's show. And I want to take this opportunity to bring on the air my distinguished guest, the man who has the label of the Mindful Chef. And when you listen to our conversation, you will know why he is known by that name. He is none other than Daniel Lanzilotta. Daniel, good morning and welcome. How did I do on the name this morning?
You were amazing. Perfect pronunciation. I thought you were from Italy for a moment. You
never know. I'm a black Italian, you know.
I just call myself.
Daniel, it is such a privilege to have met you and to be learning more about who you are. You are an amazing person. You have so much to give to the world and to mankind, and it is my distinguished honor to have this opportunity to expose you globally to my listeners, because I know you are going to help them to add years to their life. So I thank you for setting time aside this morning for our conversation.
It's my honor, Dr. Hudson, to be your guest, and that was a tremendous introduction. I'm melting here.
Thank you. You deserve every minute of it.
Thank you.
Listen, just for the sake of the listeners, I want to tell them, grab your pads and pens, because this conversation will be structured in 3 sections this morning. First, you will hear about Danielle's humble beginning. Then you're going to find out what he chose as a career and why he did it. And then we're going to talk about all the amazing things that he is doing now to make sure that his legacy lives on. So, just so you have an idea of what we're going to be talking about this morning. So, boogie down Bronx, huh?
I am from the Bronx, born and raised, New York City, 1957.
Wow.
I was raised by an Italian-American mom and an Italian-American dad. My mother is actually half Hungarian, half Sicilian, and that's a very, very, very fiery combination.
Mm.
And when you mix all that up, you get a very powerful, inspirational, and passionate upbringing.
I must introduce you to my friend George, because his parents are Hungarian. So I'll have to connect you to him as well. Yes, I, you know, you said something last night that was interesting, because I was telling the listeners at the top of the hour that you were on my cable show last night, and we had a blast. At least I had a blast.
I had a wonderful time.
I hope you did as well.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned something about growing up in the Bronx, and you said, I grew up on farmlands, and you said people who know the Bronx now would not think of the Bronx as farmlands. You want to talk a little bit about that, your growing up as a child in the Bronx, and
absolutely,
what were some of the things you saw around you?
The Bronx is the only borough that's part of the mainland. The five boroughs are mostly islands, and I think you would understand the island life.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bronx has gotten a bad reputation literally around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in France for a long time, and they used the word Le Bronx for slang to express something that's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that as a big insult when I learned that, because I grew up in the Bronx at a time when it was a fairly mixed neighborhood. It was diverse, quite diverse at that time as well, but people got along.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I got exposed to all kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would play games, and we would have a tremendous time, and there was never any worry about anything. And then all of a sudden, one day, literally overnight, all that changed.
Yes.
And it was confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were drugs and crime, and there was people didn't trust each other, and this is all ethnic backgrounds, colors, shapes, sizes.
Mm.
That's how I grew up. But I got the good part. I have a tremendous memory of safety and community and family. And the Bronx was essentially a gentleman's farm. And to this day, I think where I grew up on my block, in the backyard of a house that across the street from where I live, there was a barn. So, I don't know if it's all true, but it's there. And my mother would tell me stories about there were fields, and my grandmother, when she came from Italy, she had a nice piece of property in the Bronx, in the Williams Bridge section of the Bronx. And my father used to take me down to his house that he grew up in when he was growing up. It was no longer in the family. But he would show me where the chickens were, where they made wine, and where they essentially grew their own food on that little piece of property, and they canned stuff, and they made everything. And my grandmother brought that along to the house that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
She lived downstairs, and my family lived upstairs, but we were all mixed in together.
Mm-hmm.
And around the block were my mother's cousins and aunts, and a mile away, my mother's parents live with cousins from the other side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, one block, four houses.
Mm-hmm.
There were four houses on one block, and three of those houses, every single person was related either by blood or by marriage somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic.
I want to piggyback on something you mentioned about growing up and saw this switch. And you said overnight, you know, quick. like the snap of your fingers.
Yes.
All of a sudden, that safety in your community was no longer there. There was an infiltration of drugs and crimes. In your mind, if you can just retract a tiny bit to your childhood, what if you look back through the eyes of a child, what you thought you would attribute that sudden change to? Anything or any one or two things you saw that was different that you said, this is what brought this along?
I can't say for sure what brought it along. I saw it myself. I would see quite a bit of drug use, and I'm not talking about little things. I'm talking about serious big stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the political climate. I think it was ignorance and things that are still prevalent in the society.
Mm-hmm.
The increase in crime was due to the increase in drugs.
Mm-hmm.
It became an issue of the economy at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the 70s.
Yes.
And as I recall, there was the steel industry took a big hit,
mm-hmm.
and jobs were lost to Japan and car imports, and it's no different actually now.
Yes, so people,
sort of history is repeating itself.
Itself, and people were trying to find an easy way out, if you may. It's
right.
Easy money, you know. Let's do this for easy money. It's like people now think that, oh, let me go sell drugs. It's a lot of money. I don't have to do a lot of work. But they're not looking on what they are doing to their own lives, the lives of their children, the lives of the children in the community. This thing just snowball and snowball. I'm not saying this to be judgmental about anyone's choice. However, as a community, we owe it to each other to be responsible for each other.
Well,
I remember. Go ahead.
That's my motto. I think we have become a society of blamers, and
mm-hmm.
we are litigating everything in sight. We really don't know how to deal with each other just as humans.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a gripe with me, I'm going to bring you to some kind of people's court.
Mm.
And the TVs are flooded with the sensationalism of the law.
Mm.
We've turned the law into a circus.
Yes.
And those who
yes.
are really committing the crimes at the higher end of society are slipping through the cracks because they can buy their way out. And the little folks at the end of the spectrum are finding themselves in these types of situations in the court system. And the court systems can no longer handle the loads. So we're just, again, shooting ourselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you say that. I was in, I had to be in the court this Monday for some traffic thing. And I was sitting there, and the place was jam-packed. There was not even standing room. And one lady looked around and she saw people struggling to walk by just to get their name on the list. And she looked around in her loudest voice. She looked at the sheriff and said, oh, you all would not be in this problem if the cops was not there writing all these bogus tickets. And I was thinking, oh, Lord, no, she didn't say that. But people are so angry about everything that is happening. And I think we need to take our communities back and do what is expected of us.
I no longer believe in, or I don't think I ever really actually believe this theory. It's called the trickle-down effect.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the trickle-up effect.
That's right.
If the people, we're living in a country that was based on this idea of for the people, by the people,
mm-hmm.
and we have moved so far away from that concept, and we've given our minds, body, and souls to politicians who are career politicians. They're not there because they love us so much. They're there because it's a job, and
right.
they got a very comfortable situation. I would love to have the health insurance that everybody has in Congress and anyone who's in Washington who's in that playing in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
So we the people, for the people, by the people, we have an opportunity in this country to take back what was originally written in the Constitution. And people are not aware of the possibilities for themselves. I'm a chef, and you asked me the other day, why am I not a traditional chef in the sense that I work in a restaurant?
I don't tell them yet, because we're going to come to that part. I don't want you to talk about that now. That's why people are going to understand why you're just so unique in what you're saying. So,
getting back to that, the premise of the beginning was that in my household, we grew up in a very humble situation. My father, I said, was a mailman, and my mother was a secretary cook, and she worked in different aspects of different things at different times. But it was always secretarial or cooking or something. And we were fortunate enough to have our own house in the Bronx. And in our backyard, my grandmother would raise and grow literally everything, all vegetables, fruits. We had a pear tree, apple tree, cherry tree, peach tree, grapes, herbs, and still room enough to have a little backyard for the dog to run around. And she would can things. She would make tomato sauce, and she would can stuff in old soda bottles. She had a little capping machine, and we would go down to Arthur Avenue in the Bronx every year, and we would buy these little soda caps, and I would help her top off the bottles with olive oil and stuff in basil into the tomato sauce, and then put the cap on and press it with the machine. I still have that machine.
In fact, I
still have the bottle caps.
My Lord.
But you can't find those types of bottles anymore, really. So these are the memories I have. And my grandmother used to make vinegar, and it was always something being made. And my father would fix and build everything. And we had a kitchen table once that was a store-bought kitchen table. And the family got bigger, and we grew up. But my father decided that he didn't want to go out and buy a table. He would make a cap for the table. And he got some plywood and some formica, and he made a tabletop that went over the original table. Now, that's got to be one of the most creative solutions I have ever seen for anything, because he took what he had, and he just made it better.
Reinvent what he had. People throw everything out.
Right.
You know.
And now we're living in a world with in recent history, this has never really happened before, that we're confronted with the possibility of things running out. But we're still consuming like crazy. And people say to me all the time, how can I make a difference? And I just look at them and I say, make better choices about everything you do. You have the power to make and send a message to anyone and everyone who is trying to sell you something. If they cannot meet your quality standards, don't buy it. Don't use it. Or reinvent what you already know. Someone was telling me about a chocolate nut product. I won't mention it by name. And I said I wouldn't give that product to a dog. Because it's essentially trans fat. It's a product that's just contains so much fat. And I said, just make your own. Find out what the main ingredients are in it. It's a chocolate-based product with hazelnuts. You can make that very easily by going out and buying some good chocolate, some hazelnuts, developing a recipe in a food processor, and whipping it up yourself.
Yeah, but over the years, I have encountered lots and lots of grown people who do not know how to make anything.
And
they
this is the problem, Dr. Hudson. This is the essential bottom line problem. I can't even comprehend what I see, because I was teaching culinary arts in a local school district here in Connecticut. In an affluent community, and I've been all over the place in poverty-stricken communities, and the bottom line is that the problems are epidemic across the board for all economic social strata. It doesn't matter if you're coming from affluence or coming from poverty in America. The problems are epidemic. drugs are rampant in affluent communities, and their drugs are rampant in poverty-stricken communities.
Okay.
The bottom line is people are not doing things for themselves because they don't know how to find the joy in the most simplistic things. They turn always to something else, and that happens to be drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs are nothing more than a way to try to find some kind of good feeling, but it's not a real good feeling.
That's
why there's an explosion in the yogurt industry, for instance, because people are starting to understand that if you want to feel real joy, you have to eliminate all the exteriors and
go
internally. That's where the joy is. And for me, sweeping a floor can be a joyful experience.
That's right.
There's a rhythm in it. There's
exactly.
There's something in that, the movement of the broom, the sound of the broom. It sounds absurd, but if you can't figure that out, that there's actually a joy. And in Zen Buddhism, they chant over and over and over and over the same exact thing. Why is that? Because it sets up a rhythm in the brain of peacefulness. And that repetition, that constant repetition, is the ability to start to let the brain relax. And we have lost that in the society.
You know, we have become a society of popcorn, microwave results. You put it in, you press one button. You don't even have to make the minute. You look for the word popcorn, you put it on, bam, it's happening, you get it.
That's a great example. Because popcorn, it's a traditional native people's food. It's as indigenous to America as anything could be. It's probably more so than apple pie. And the making of popcorn under a fire, a real fire, in a real way with the proper fat, olive oil. I use olive oil. And flavorings that you could put on. It would take work, and that's the operative word here. It's the idea that we have lost the notion of what work is. Work. People are frightened by the word work.
Exactly. It's like you're putting them on a gallows or something when you mention work. Oh, no, 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 but that is work. Yes, it is work.
And it takes work
is healthy.
To make good popcorn.
That's right. It's like everything they say, I can make it from scratch, but why do you have to make it from scratch? Because it is the right thing to do. And I can see when we get in a conversation, we can go on and on and on and on and on and on. So you grew up in the Bronx. You spoke about a rich, 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 rich upbringing. And I'm so glad that you have that to hold on to. So when you go back into that community and if you get into a conversation with the young people, you can give them that richness of the beginning of that same place that they are now and to show them how they can decide to not choose what's there, but to begin to embrace some of what you share with them. And I know that every child would be honored to have you share that with them, Daniel. So,
in growing
go ahead.
Up there, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, in growing up there, I'm talking about family of the family and the family structure. And within that family structure, even though I was given a lot of these ideas and abilities to make and do things for myself, there was always this idea that there was a cap to it. Advanced education wasn't a very big item in my neighborhood. The idea of finishing high school was, you know, if you were lucky to finish high school, and I'm talking about the community at large, and college was not mentioned. It was not in the consciousness of that community.
Wow.
Higher education. And one day I was standing on a corner with a bunch of guys who hung out on corners. That's what we did.
Yeah, or sit on the stoop.
Right, or sit on the stoop, and I've done plenty of that. And one day I just looked at everything, and I said, I have to get out of here. And I didn't know what to do, so I asked my parents, and I asked my mother. I said, I want to go to school. I want to go to college. And she said, she's not college educated, nor was my father. And They said, well, go ask Cousin Albert. So
I
went around the block, and he mentioned the community college up in Westchester County at Westchester Community College. So I went and I investigated it, and I enrolled, and that was the beginning of my journey to get a higher education. But no one put me in that direction from early on. The Bronx, after all, and people from the Bronx, they don't go to college. I mean, there were certain things that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I eventually found out a couple of years ago there was a guy that I knew by face and name. You know, he wasn't really a friend. Mm-hmm. And I heard that he became a doctor. And I was overwhelmed. I was so happy to hear
that you know,
and he lived in a tougher area, actually.
Then you are thinking, if he can do it, what about me?
It was amazing that this guy, I remember him very well. And I said, wow, that's really amazing that he managed to do that.
Do that.
And my own personal journey, I went to Westchester Community College.
Hold on, before you pass, before you go on, I must tell you that before I forget. I also went to Westchester Community College. That's where I did my entrepreneurial training the first time.
Well, it was fantastic for me because I got a chance finally to figure out what I could do.
Yes.
And I was a drama major in production design. And from there, I did Westchester Community College, and I had a counselor, and he suggested to finish up the four-year degree, and I went to Hofstra University.
Hempstead, yeah.
And now I was living on campus, but I didn't like it. It was not my environment. It was suburban kids and
different from home.
Totally not what I was used to, and I got lost in the system. So I decided that I would leave there, and my father nearly flipped out. And I said, "Well, I'm gonna move to California." And I went out to California to Santa Monica. I registered at Santa Monica Community College. I spent the year there so I can establish residency there. Went to Santa Monica Community College, and from there I found my way. I found my community. It was more oriented towards me being in California, and that environment was so diverse, so wonderful, and so amazingly alive that I fell in love with the whole idea of continuing on my education. I got a full scholarship to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. Finished my four-year degree there, and I actually had an opportunity to go to Yale to get a master's degree in production design. But by that time, I was school burnt out, and to make money during my college years at Carnegie Mellon, I was cooking for a professor. It was dinner.
So look at you.
I was eating, and I was getting paid. I was getting paid $50 a week.
And you were getting a meal every day?
Every day.
Look at
and
you.
It was great, and I fell in love with cooking. And it just tied in because I already had an established interest in cooking because of my family upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
I went to culinary school, but I didn't have any money. So I decided I would go to cooking school, and I wrote to the cooking school that I didn't have any money, if they had any programs. And they said, yeah, do work study. And you can essentially go here for free. So I said, fine. So I got accepted. They took me in under this program to do the work study. I was there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I would go home at 11 o'clock at night. It was a three-month program, and it turned out to be like a year program because I was literally there all day and all night. And I did that, and I got my culinary arts background in cooking, and I just went on from there. But what was interesting about it was that I was seeking something, and I wound up not having to pay a very large fee for the tuition. Within the culinary arts world, if people really want to change their lives, cooking is probably one of the best ways to do it because it's so diverse that learning is never ending, and there's money available for kids to go to cooking school.
And it's amazing when you get in that kitchen and you take all that raw food, and then, you know, in such and such a time, you look on the table and you see all that creativity there. I know people who don't cook, they don't understand the feeling and the high. I've never been on drugs, but I get such a high when I cook and create something, and when people eat it and I see the smile on their faces, oh, it gives me such a feeling of appreciation.
Exactly.
I am so touched by what you just said.
You were cooking
for the professor. You didn't sit there and say, oh, I don't have any money. You were getting $50 a week, but you know that you had a meal every day.
Exactly.
Talk about creative.
And what's interesting about it, the student, you know, the stereotypical student is always talking about how they don't eat, they don't have food and the quality. But I found a way to cook, get great food because someone else was actually buying the ingredients,
mm-hmm.
and I would make the food, leave it for the professor's family, and I would leave a note at the end of the week what I needed and mm-hmm. for the menu for next week, and that went on for a long time, and I achieved getting paid and having a good meal every day.
What a blessing! Because you know why college kids now are not eating? Because they don't know how to cook. They know how to go to a fast food place and
to get
something. So when they don't have any money, they don't have any food.
Well, that's a key ingredient into the demographics of how fast food restaurants and establishments look for opportunities to place restaurants near universities and colleges
mm-hmm.
and technical schools. If you look at a map and see wherever there's a university or a college, you're going to find four or five different types
of fast food
establishments.
Oh.
And they know this. And kids are inundated with junk food from early on, and it just carries over into adult years to eat more and more junk.
When they have their own families. Because when they have their own families, you can only share with me the things that you know.
Right.
And if you don't know anything about proper preparation and all of that, then how are you going to know what to feed me? You know.
It's a cycle of depleted nutrition,
mm-hmm.
and people are just eating to fill their bellies up. And when you mm-hmm. eat a lot of fat-based foods, mm-hmm. that's exactly what is happening. Your mm-hmm. body, your brain is telling you that you're satiated, but
mm-hmm.
the nutritional density isn't there.
That's
so
right.
People are getting sick. You've mm-hmm. seen it. It's epidemic what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's systematic. It's starting very early on,
mm-hmm.
and it continues on through grade school. In the school systems, the food is horrible. It carries on into high school. Food is horrible. It carries on to college years. The food is horrible. And young adults are bringing those same misguided understandings of food into their adult lives, into their next generation, into their new families. And
mm-hmm.
it's a cycle, and the fast food establishments know this. And
mm-hmm.
people are literally hooked on the sugar content.
Yeah, it's an addiction.
The
yep.
salt content of the foods
mm-hmm.
that are offered
mm-hmm.
at fast food restaurants.
You know, we are bombarded with all the advertisement, and then people get so addicted to getting that stuff because the advertisement said so. And, oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. But, you know, we are so blessed in Connecticut, especially in the summertime. If you come out of the center of town and you drive to your gate, you can encounter so many fresh vegetable stands with fruit and vegetable. And for those people who want to just store it for when it's not in season, but we have the opportunity. I was telling my friend, she was visiting the other day from Rochester, and I was showing her the stands, and I said, no, you just serve yourself and put your check in the box. And she was amazed. She could not believe it. So people who have made the decision to do better about their food choices can do that. I was going to ask you at what stage you knew you wanted to go into food, but you answered that. So I'm not going to have you go over that again. But let us move forward. You spoke about being in France for a long time and now here. How would you categorize the French's choice of food and nutrition versus the American choices?
Well, the French historically have a food culture that's
mm-hmm.
based upon you know, hundreds of years of cuisine that was developed in that particular region of the world. And throughout France, the cuisine changes quite often. There are different regions with offering different types of foods. And they have a very well-stocked larder in the historical sense, that farming traditions are still intact. Mm-hmm. And yet, at the same time, France is they're a modern country, and they also have issues with what's happening in the food world. But their sensibility is historical. So they have the ability to understand the enjoyment and process of cooking because they've had a lot of time to develop it. Same in Italy, same in Spain, along the Mediterranean, through North Africa. You have all these wonderful types of cuisines, you know, from Algeria into Israel, into the Middle East. There's all these wonderful, wonderfully based cuisines that celebrate freshness and wholesomeness, and it's just part of the culture. So within these countries, there's a sense of tradition that's been passed down. Mm-hmm. And in this culture, because it's so young, we haven't really established a consciousness of a cuisine. Yes, we do have regional foods in America. In the South, we have foods, and in the North, we have different types. And, you know, in Maine, there's lobster and what have you. But collectively, we don't have a consciousness of a food culture that we call our own, that is more based in European and North African areas. Even throughout Africa, the meals shared as a family. In this culture, we've lost that sensibility where we sit down and eat, and we've substituted it with that convenience. There's really, the word convenience is just a marketing ploy. There's no convenience in convenience food. I mean, it doesn't exist. Because what's in that convenience food is packaged sickness. The food is not based in any reality of nutrition. And they can market all they want about what value it has. It doesn't have any value whatsoever except to fill you up until you get hungry again and you purchase the next, you know, super-duper supersize me order. But in France, there's still a tradition. There's still great products, amazing products that are available to the public. There's a store in France called Leader Price, and I mention that only because I support it wholeheartedly. And it's lower income, middle income families and folks go to this store, and it is just packed with value. I'm always amazed by this place. I'm a Leader Price fanatic. When I go to France, I spend tremendous amounts of time shopping there because for my money, I'm going to find some great, great value. And that's across the board, from vegetables to canned goods to wine and beer. Everything is offered at a very reasonable price, and ordinary folks can go there and get good food, good nutrition, and at a very, very reasonable price. And I have yet to see that model here in this country. We've become a culture of division through food. Food is a weapon. It's a status symbol. It's a fad. And we have become the haves and the have-nots of nutrition. Mm-hmm. And if you have discretionary dollars, you can shop at those high-end organic shops that offer all kinds of wonderful food, and if you don't have discretionary dollars, you're not going to get that kind of nutrition. We keep talking about this idea that everyone deserves, you know, good, wholesome foods. Even at the farmers markets in this country, people are having a hard time trying to pay for the kinds of prices that are offered at farmers markets. And at least on the East Coast, I see these prices. I was just last week, at a farmer's market in Fairfield County, and they were asking 50 cents a piece for a jalapeno pepper.
Oh, yeah. Over
50
here.
50 cents a piece.
They were four for a dollar over here. Yeah, but still,
and
yep.
I find that outrageous. I am credited with bringing the farmer's market to Westport, Connecticut, with a group of folks that got the farmers market started in Westport, and I'm a bit disturbed by the prices because I don't see just ordinary folks shopping there. There should be tour guides bringing people in from different communities to shop at places like that. Food is, it's a right in a sense. Good quality food is, it's just the human right to me that mm-hmm. people have the ability to have that kind of nutrition. And we're not going to find it in the fast food places. We're not going to find it in the super-duper large brick-and-mortar stores. They're looking mm-hmm. to turn over a product. And this culture has turned food into a product. And I'm happy to say I spent a lot of time in France. When I go to France, there's still that tradition of quality at for a reasonable price. And you could spend all kinds of crazy money in France on food, but mm-hmm. there's still the ability just to be an ordinary person and enjoy a meal. And the French have it right. You know, whatever we may say about the French in this country, they have something right. They
That's
take
right.
the time to eat, and they take mm-hmm. the time to eat together. The,
That's right.
The,
That's
the
what
bones are still in place, and they're mm-hmm. still enjoying that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I hope mm-hmm. it goes on for a long, long time. Even if they've been inundated with American fast food culture, which they do love to participate in, but they also have that foundation of quality.
You know, I am blessed to every summer be in the company of some French students and chaperones because I coordinate that program. And I remember 2 years ago, I had a chaperone who was visiting from the north of France. And she was staying with a friend of mine over in Waterbury. And she asked her host family if she could have myself and a couple other friends she had met over for dinner. And I tell you, we were in the kitchen and she was making the salad. And before the main course was finished, we all finished the salad. So by the time the dinner was ready, the complete meal, the salad was already gone. We ate it all. And she went down to the farmer's market there in Waterbury. She shopped for the things and she came. The dressing was freshly made, everything. And it was such a difference. She said, oh, well, that's how I do it. At home, I've never bought a bottle of salad dressing. I use fresh lemon juice. I use basil. And she shows how to make that. And I tell you something, that you could taste the love in that meal. Because
that's
she put
exactly
so much in it.
Exactly what we need to get back to. And I'm happy to report that there is a giant movement in America to get back to that. It may be slow. The farm stands are coming back. The farmers markets are coming back. Many communities are doing that. In Westport, there's a group called GVI.
Mm-hmm.
It's a group of ordinary folks from the Westport area that mm-hmm. are bringing fresh food to schools. They're bringing the first edible school garden to Staples High School, and now working with Bridgeport to bring community gardens to Bridgeport. So there is a movement, but it's not funded the way it should be.
Yes.
We need better funding. I spoke to you last night on your TV show about starting from the bottom up. We can no longer depend on from the top down. It doesn't work. That economy is fake. It's fraudulent, and it doesn't spread the wealth. We have to create our own economies. When people talk about the economy today in this country, I sit and I have to laugh to myself because people are depending on others to create their reality.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a country that was based on the idea of the pioneer, and we've
mm-hmm.
walked so far away from that idea. We've offshored everything to other countries in the world, and then we buy back our concepts and our ideas. Look at jazz, for instance. We don't appreciate jazz and the culture that it was created in.
Mm-hmm.
We offshored it to other countries, and then we buy it back.
That's
But we do it with everything, automobiles, electronics,
mm-hmm.
bicycles. There's not an item that I don't pick up that's not that I – when I look at it, I look at every single thing I touch to see where it's made. And
mm-hmm.
I'm dumbfounded by the idea that we have offshored everything in this country.
So
when they talk about the economy, how to stimulate the economy – Are we fools? What does it take to understand that you have to make something, produce something,
mm-hmm.
goods and services, to sell?
That's right. That's right.
It's that simple. We've
you
done
know.
It in the past. We created this idea of capitalism, and yet we've offshored it to everybody else, and then we sit here and we shoot ourselves in the foot saying, where are the jobs? Well, the
that's
jobs
right.
are overseas.
See? Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay. And people are suffering in this country. There are bankruptcies every which way you turn, foreclosures, whole cities are collapsing. Detroit, car manufacturing, we produce steel. We have the natural resources. We know how to design and build and manufacture, but yet we keep turning our backs to ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and we don't celebrate the fact that we have this technology. We created it. It's Microsoft. It's an American idea. It's
mm-hmm.
all done overseas.
You know, you mentioned about the trickling up. I want you to research an organization called LIFE, L-L-I-F-E. The founder of this organization is a good friend of mine, Dr. Gerald Higginbotham. He is out in St. Louis, Missouri. I'll have to introduce you both because you'll have so much to talk about. What he's doing in his community with opening the farmers markets and getting to build wealth from the ground up. So
exactly.
I'd have to hook you two up. Let's talk about, I don't know how much more time you have, but however, let us talk about why aren't you a traditional chef?
Well, I am a traditional chef in many sense. I have a private chef service, and I do a lot of cooking classes, and I educate folks who are trying to lose weight and learn how to cook and take care of themselves by creating their own dishes and recipes. I do a lot of consulting. I am traditional in that sense. But I'm not traditional in the sense because I actually voice my opinion. Because if you look at the food chain, there's something really, really wrong with it. It's damaged. And food touches every aspect of everyone's life every day, three times a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's a multi-billion dollar business, no matter how you chop it up, no matter how you split it up. Food touches every aspect of everything. If you're an engineer, you're still going to eat. If you're a garbage person collecting garbage, you're still going to eat. So I looked at this whole picture and I said to myself, I don't agree with how it's being done. I don't agree on how people approach food. I can make a difference. I'm the gatekeeper to your mouth. Mm-hmm. And there has to be a better way of making people understand, or at least educating them, giving them an opportunity to think about themselves differently. And I had an experience once when I first came back to this country from France. I went to a guy who was renting chefs out for different occasions and parties and things, and he had an opportunity for me to go up and work at the I think it was the Goodwill Center up in Bridgeport. There was a cook there who was doing breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and he needed to take off a week, and the gentleman who was hiring me out asked me if I knew where I was going. I said, yes, I know Goodwill, and it was, a temporary shelter at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, sure, I'll do it. So I went up, and I was just back from France like a week ago,
mm-hmm.
and I was using all kinds of wonderful, beautiful products in France, and I got to Goodwill, and the gentleman who was the cook there showed me around, and he
mm-hmm.
brought me into the walk-in freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, where's the walk-in refrigerator? And he says, we don't have one. We just have a storage refrigerator after everything is just cooked and it's put into these refrigerators. And everything that was coming into that kitchen was rock-solid frozen food. Now, not all frozen food is bad. Some
right.
of it's good. But it's not fresh. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's frozen. It's processed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little voice in my head saying, leave, go, don't do this job. And another voice was saying, stay. So I stayed. I made breakfast.
Mm.
I tried to jazz it up the best I could with what I had.
Mm.
I left. That was a Monday. I came back Tuesday with my own herbs, spices. I brought some of my own condiments with me. And I started playing with the food.
Mm.
Wednesday morning when I came in, there was a group of about 20 folks there that were in the shelter temporarily. The gate went up, and I got a I got an applause from 20 folks saying, Dan, Danny, what did you do to the food? Danny, what did you do to the food? And I stood
my
there.
God.
I was in
tears
shock.
Tears coming to my
like,
eyes.
I was like, whoa.
tears came to my eyes.
If you understand my cooking background, I cooked for some really heavy-duty folks in California. I mean, I cooked for celebrities. I cooked for wealthy folks. I cooked in all affluent communities. I was cooking at the higher end of the food chain. And all of a sudden, I'm confronted by 20, whatever it was, 15, 20 folks that were there. And my life changed radically from that day on. I went home.
My
I told my girlfriend. I said, I don't know what happened, but I touched people in a way they weren't touched. These are folks that were, you know, indigent. I mean, people who didn't care. But what really dawned on me was they all have tongues.
That's right. Nothing is wrong with their taste buds.
And it's no matter what color you are, no matter what religion you are, no matter where you come from in the planet, you still have an innate thing going on with the brain and flavor.
Mm.
And somehow I learned one of the most powerful lessons I'll ever have in cooking. Everyone has a tongue that appreciates good-tasting food.
Mm.
It never dawned on me before that time. I was in a world of fancy food and celebrities and food as a fad. And I worked in Hollywood. I worked in fancy restaurants. And I was like, okay, it's another fancy dish for $35 a dish. And all these celebrities are coming here, and it's all pretty. And that's the world I cooked in. And then I got here, and I was working in a shelter for a week, and it blew my mind. It didn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. You still have taste buds. It was
amazing.
Mind-boggling. It was mind-boggling. And from that point on, I started to develop a different approach to food. I started doing interactive cooking classes. I started working with families who were going through divorce. And how to bring families together. I was written up in the Westport News about my ideas about how to bring people together. Then I realized that practically every war in the world is a family feud.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
Wow. Amazing. I tell you something. Whether or not you had collected a paycheck for going to that job, you earned $1 million from it. From that lesson that you learned from that group of people.
Well, it changed my direction, and it changed everything about my consciousness, because the premise of every war, almost every war in the world, is a family feud. Israel and the Palestinians, they're cousins. They're biblical cousins. They share the same basic food cuisine. They share the same ingredients. They just flip it around a little bit. And if you find it in Korea, North Korea, South Korea, they're cousins. They're one family. They eat the same food. If you go to Northern Ireland, Protestants and Catholics, they're cousins. They're the same nationality. They're eating the same food. It goes on. Tutsis, Rwanda, they're all cousins. They're all family. It's a big, it's a family feud that has gotten out of control. And we keep sitting around trying to figure out how to get people to the peace table. It's really simple. Get them to share a meal.
That's right. That's right.
Get over the nonsense and start talking to each other in a human way, and you'll get to the peace table. Eventually, you'll get to the peace table.
That's right.
We propagate war because there's profit in it. There's no point in finding Bin Laden because then the profit. The war is driven by profit. There's no reason to end the war in Afghanistan. There's no reason to end the war in Iraq. There's no reason to stop any war because somebody's supplying it with supplies.
On demand.
It's a powerful mechanism because when you look at the big structure, big agriculture, big oil, big military, big government, big business, they're all in the same bed together. And that bed is profit. It's profit-driven.
Yes.
I ask people all the time, is there profit in peace? And they talk about the new economy, but we're still living in the fossil fuel economy, and so long as we keep living in that economy, we're going to have nothing but war, disease, and anguish. And until someone comes along and says enough is enough, we can make this world work properly as it should be, because there is a divine order to it, that we can make it happen, and food becomes crucial. Food and water, and in my opinion, water is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because without
That's
water,
true.
Without soil, there's going
right.
to be no food. Food is just
That's
an
right.
end result of a reaction between right. the nutrients in the soil and the water that we give this powerful thing called the seed,
mm-hmm.
life, and sunlight. That's why solar energy is taking a big hit, because mm-hmm. it's free.
Danielle, I want to be respectful. I wanted you to know that it's 11 a.m. and I don't know whether or not how much more time you have, but I wanted to be respectful of that to let you know.
Yes, it's fine.
Okay. All right. So, yes, you know, it's so much good stuff that we are talking about here, and to know that as a people, we need to step back and figure out what it takes for us to make an educated choice when we open our mouth to ingest something in our bodies. And as you can listen to from the conversation that we are having here, it's not only going in to buy the food off the shelves that is important. You have to look on all aspects of your food, the choice, how it is grown, how it is prepared, and how it impacts other people's lives, because this thing snowballs, as Daniel just mentioned about. We want to get to peace. We can use food to get there quicker than we are doing with this war here, just to summarize what he said. And it is the truth. Because, you know, I remember back in 1996, or seven it was, when I began working at Danbury Children First, and I got together with, I think it was five parents, Daniel, and the position I had got hired for was parent school coordinator. And Danbury is a very diverse community, and we were trying to build relationships within the schools and the parents. And we talked and talked and brainstormed and brainstormed and brainstormed, and then we came up with what is still known as and celebrated as the Multicultural Parents Day. And the first event we had the News Times front page cover and the second page, because people came out, over 500 people came out representing their different culture, and they brought food, they were dressing their ethnic clothing. And that large community for once saw themselves as one. The Hispanic people did not feel inferior to the Caucasian. The Caucasian did not feel above the blacks, and the list go on. Everybody came together on that day and founded the Multicultural Parents Day that is still celebrated in Danbury, because people remove all the prejudice and all the stereotype and things like that. And the food brought people together. Their food and their ethnic behaviors, like the kids wrote essays about their culture and their food. And it was such an amazing education for the entire community.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's really about that.
Now, I know you are, right now you are involved in expanding your legacy, because you already have a great repertoire of legacy and things that you have initiated. But now part of that investment and mentoring and passing on has to do with teaching young children to cook. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I started the continuing education program, working there almost 4 years ago, I'd say 3.5 years ago, in the after-school program. I've done other things like that in various other areas in Wilton, in Westport, in New York City. And kids love to cook. And I've done parents and kids as well. And I found that when the parent was with their child in a cooking class, they instilled fear in the child. You know, the use of knives, how to stand in front of the stove, hot oil. And the more I did it, the more I realized that the child was only picking up on the fear of the parent. And when I had the kids alone, they were more adventurous. They took more risk with knives, you know, in the sense of how to utilize the knife properly. Because I always, every class is started with hygiene and safety skills of how to use knives. How to stand in front of a hot oil when you're trying to saute something. How to place the food in the pan properly without getting burnt, without having splatter. And they're more risk takers when the parents aren't around. So children love to cook. They love the idea of engaging, because cooking is a process that you wind up with a result in either in a few minutes or, you know, over a course of time, an hour of taking a cooking class. And it's exciting to see kids go through that process and learn something and get recipes and get excited about making something. And my platform is not just about the cooking aspect of one's life and taking the time to cook a dinner and share that, because there's a very, very important aspect of cooking, and that is to share what you make. You can't just cook and eat alone. This doesn't exist in my mind. You have to take those ingredients, you have to take the time, you have to take the process, and you have to do the work. And the work is always important, because that's where the mind is going to find the joy. You have to find the joy and the satisfaction in that. And kids are not getting that at home. So I like the idea that kids will have this opportunity to learn to do the process, and the process means work. Cooking is about work. And we have to get back to the idea that work is an enjoyment. You may not always like what you do in life, but if you just try to tweak it a little bit and find out that there is something there that you'll find, even if it's just for a moment,
enjoyment,
that you'll get some joy. If you're peeling potatoes in a restaurant for 2 or 3 hours, maybe you may not find the joy in peeling the potatoes, but the guy next to you might have something interesting to say. So
that's
It's about conversation. It's about territory. It's about learning about someone else's culture. Maybe eat something you don't like because you've been telling yourself you don't like it. I find that most people who say they don't like something in the food world, they've never even tasted it.
Never even tasted it.
So you might want to taste it. Would you want to go to a restaurant that just served boiled potatoes? No. Would you want to go to a buffet where they only had boiled potatoes? No. So if you approach life like you were approaching a smorgasbord or a buffet where there was all kinds of foods, from soup to nuts and chocolate and vegetables and meat, what have you, you want to see diversity there. You want to see colors and textures and flavors and hot and cold. And that's how you should approach one's life. You want to go into the world and look at the world as if it was a smorgasbord. Look at someone who's different than you. Go have a conversation with them. They're not going to eat your head off. If you come from Europe and you're Caucasian, go talk to somebody who is brown. They might have something to tell you. You know, talk to a homeless person. Talk to somebody you don't know and share something, because that's where the excitement is.
The world has to be, to me,
a giant buffet of everything, and taste everything, and then make the decision if you like it or not. Don't tell me that, oh, I don't like it. Well, did you try it? No. Well, how do you know?
I don't like, You know, a couple of years ago, I'm going back to the French again. A couple of years ago, there was a boy, 10 and a half and 11. They were cousins. And they were here for 3 weeks. And they stayed with a couple who are very good friends of mine. And one day, they called the office of my friends to ask them what time they would be home. And then they told them, and they asked whether it was possible for them to come a little earlier because they wanted to go grocery shopping. So my friend asked the two boys, oh, well, we went shopping on Saturday. What is it you want? Because we can pick it up for you. They said, no, they have a recipe and they need to go shop because they are going to make them dinner. Two young boys. So my friend's wife went home, picked the boys up while her husband remained at the office, left them shopping and then picked them back home. And she said it was amazing because when they went home, the boy asked them to wash their hands and sit around the table and talk to each other and relax. And right. The first thing they brought them was like a palate cleanser.
Right.
And then they gave them their dessert. I mean, their salads and everything. And my friend was telling me, I was sitting and I could not believe what I was seeing. What was supposed to be cold was served cold. What was supposed to be hot was piping hot. It came from the stove to our table in front of us. And she said, Daphne, those two boys did not want us to do anything. And she said, you would not believe how delicious that meal was. And then there was another woman there. She said, the next time they're here, you better bring them over to teach my 22-year-old daughter how to cook. But I think it goes back here where we instill fear in our children. And they're afraid to take the risk to do anything. We do not allow them. We overprotect them.
Right. And that's where the problems stem, because when you instill the fear in a child, they don't have the skills or the power of reasoning to understand why these things occur. Mm-hmm. And they carry this kind of stuff, if it's racism or lack of understanding what food tastes like or whatever it may be.
Yes.
It's coming, that kind of education is coming from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very simple if you have the ability or the awareness to make a difference in a child's life by
exposing them
to different flavors and ideas and cultures.
Yeah, I'm speaking to you now about kids, and you know my friends Judith, my friend Mark and Jeanette has a little 4-year-old Lucas, and Lucas is always making brownies with either his mama or his father. And they made it brownies for Mother's Day. He and his father made it for his mother and myself. And then another time we were talking about cooking and being a chef. And you know what little Lucas said, Daniel? He looked at me, he said, Auntie Daphne, I'm not a real chef yet. I'm only a brownie chef. That is all I can cook, brownies. And I look at him and I say, honey, you're going to learn to cook more things. But his parents allows him to come in the kitchen and experiment with them and see what they're doing. And these little kids learn, because he was eating crab legs one day. And I looked at the little 4-year-old eating the crab leg and I said to him, boy, is there anything that you don't eat? He said, yes, meat and chicken. And I asked the question, not remembering that they did not eat meat. And his mom said, well, why don't you eat meat or chicken? He said, because I'm a vegetarian. 4 years old. And he got it.
Well, that's very nice to hear.
Where would you like to see Americans put most of their emphasis surrounding food? What direction you would love to see us go? If you had a magic wand and you would wind it open the year today, what would you love to see happen?
I would like to see the old-fashioned home economics classes come back. There was a time when most schools had home economics classes where, but it was all, it was early sexism. It was girls took home economics and boys took shop. And I would like to see schools reintroduce a modern version of home economics and get engaging kids in sewing, cooking, building, manufacturing their own little toys, whatever it may be, in shop classes, woodworking, car mechanics, shop, any kind of shop, and getting kids involved with using their hands. Because, you know, people say, oh, they work with their hands, but that's misinformation. The hands just don't do it. The mind tells the hands what to do. It's the brain. And we need to get kids back in this idea of doing and building and making them things for themselves, and you will see a revolution. Because right now, everyone's living in a virtual world where nothing is really produced. They're sitting in front of video games and spending endless hours on computers, and I'm not against that. I'm for that, but there's a limit to it. There has to be a balance. And just whatever it may be, pottery, cooking, drawing, model making, building airplanes, model cars, and reintroducing this idea that it's okay if you're a boy if you have a sewing machine. It's fine. It's okay. and just mixing it all up so that everyone's getting a taste of what a tool is. Because essentially cooking is like a manufacturing plant. The food comes in, it's looked at, it's thought about, it's processed in the cooking process, it's prepped, and then you have an end result, just like you would do if you were building a car. Raw materials come in, it's designed, it's prepped, it's cut, it's chopped, it's sawed, it's welded, and then at the end of the day you have a car. And just to give kids this idea of satisfaction of making something for themselves, be it a wooden toy or a meal. It doesn't matter what it is. It's the same process. It's the same hands-on experience. And we need to get back to that because that will eventually stimulate an economy.
I tell you, I'm sure what you said was very good, but I did not hear all of it. I don't want you to repeat because I'm praying it went through. I think we were having some disturbance, so I wasn't hearing you. But I heard you said one word, and you mentioned about home economics, and that's all I'll be able to piggyback on because I know the rest of what you said was magnificent. However, I didn't hear it. I'm not sure. Do you know this name, Adrian Miles?
No, I don't.
Adrian Miles is a chef in Hartford. I have to hook you up with the brother. He's out of Barbados. And his humble beginnings began in a home economic class in school in Barbados.
Perfect.
And he, you know, I had an Adrian on the show. Chef Miles, he's affectionately known. I'll hook you both up. And he was talking about when he usually be in the home economics classes. He didn't have any friends, but when the cake was finished baking and the chicken was through frying, he had a lot of friends.
Right.
And when I had him on the show, it was amazing, Daniel, because someone who knew him in home economics from Barbados actually called the show from Barbados to compliment him.
You see? That's how it works. We have to get back to that basic education.
Mm-hmm.
Schools don't offer that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we're losing the touch of the hand. And I briefly said, the brain is telling the hands what to do. And cooking is a hands-on experience. It
mm-hmm.
stimulates all five senses.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get back to that idea about stimulating our senses in a positive way. And food does that. Food touches all
That's
of it.
Right.
Sight,
That's right.
Smell, tactile, touch, taste. But it just goes on and on and on. Food
That's right.
encompasses
That's
all
right.
the disciplines. It,
That's
it,
right.
It affects biology,
mm-hmm.
agriculture. It affects, you know, physics.
That's
it
right. With
all
your
the
math,
science,
everything.
Mathematics.
That's right. That's
reading,
right.
Comprehension. Ooh. And we can't diminish cooking, because in this culture, what we've done, what in regards to the French, we've diminished the idea of cooking. Oh, he's just a cook. Oh, he just works in a restaurant and a cook. Or she's a waiter. So what? It's an art form, and we have to celebrate that art form. We have to pay more attention to when we eat out. We have to pay more attention to who the wait staff is. It's a job. It's a real job. It's an honest job. It's a hard job. And we don't respect people who are in this industry. When you see a waitress or a waiter, they're earning a living. Give them a tip. It's part of the program.
Right.
That's what they're there for. They're not committing a crime. We need to pay more attention to the restaurants
we
frequent. We have to pay attention to the who's in the kitchen, because when the food comes out of the restaurant kitchen, you will know immediately if that person cares about what they're doing.
I tell you, Danielle, 2 weeks ago, as a matter of fact, it was the first weekend in September. I don't know if you know this restaurant up in Southbury called the Olive Tree.
I've heard of it.
I did not know that restaurant was there. And I had the opportunity to had gone there with a friend of mine, one of my colleagues who was visiting from out of town. And Danielle, I tell you something. That food is out of this world. And when you sit and talk with the owners, you know why. Everything that comes out of that kitchen is prepared by Sal himself. Sal came here when he was 19 years old. And he has built a name in the food industry for himself. And I went back the night after my friend left. And I sat and I chatted with him. We chatted the night before, too. But I chatted with him that second night, and to learn more about him and what's going on when he's preparing that food. Because you taste the food and you know, it's a lot more than the spice. He has assistants in the kitchen, but everything that comes out in front of you, he fixes. And because of that, it's kind of like taking a toll on him, because he said, I've trained many people, but they don't stay because they say it's hard work.
Right.
They want to go where it's frozen and they pop it, defrost, and then move on.
Exactly.
But, you know, I said it makes such a difference. And I say, well, keep training people. Keep training them. Keep training them, because we want this kind of legacy to live on, I said to him. And what you are saying now is just an affirmation that what I said to him during our conversation was the right thing for me to say to him, to encourage him.
Exactly. You couldn't have said it better.
So let's see that you have more time. Let us talk about food preparation. Deal with me in my kitchen.
Talk food preparation?
My how should I be preparing my food?
Well, this is how my theory is this. When I look at an ingredient, the ingredient has to speak to me. It has to tell me what it wants me to do to it. It's about the food and me releasing that food and giving me my nutrition. Now, I don't believe food should be overcooked. I like very quick, high heats. I want to pack the food with flavor from the time it hits a pan, say.
Mm-hmm.
I want to caramelize, get some of the natural sugars going. If I'm roasting, I like to roast things more than I like anything else. I don't eat much fried food.
I can't believe I got a disturbance. Oh.
Hello?
All right. I got a disturbance. I didn't hear that. I have to go back on the archive to listen to that. But continue, please.
And my philosophy of my cooking style is very high heats for a very short time, roasting more than anything else. I don't fry much food. I will saute something like a chicken breast to get some color on the skin and then finish it in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use many. I don't use much butter, but I don't think butter is bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think margarine and the hydrogenated oils are bad, as we all are starting to figure out. use a lot of olive oil, a lot of fresh vegetables, and I keep it as simple as possible.
I noticed on your Facebook page, I tell you, man, you got me hungry. I got to take you up to Housatonic Valley. You would have a ball, Housatonic Valley Regional High School. They have one of the best cafeterias, all fresh. You're going to love that place. I got to take you up there.
I really would like to do that.
I'd have to call the guy because I'm supposed to be taking my crew up there to get a crew to go up there and tape a show from beginning to end. So we're going to talk about that. I did a show with them before because they are doing what you are talking about, and I think every school in the United States should go there. So
I would love to be involved with that, seriously.
I would need to let me connect with the guy because of the exposure I gave them on my cable show and the feedback, they are going to implement an audiovisual class where I can just go with the cameras and get the kids right there because you know all the people at the studio are volunteers.
Right.
And I can have my own team there to tape it. But I think the world need to hear more about them. Yeah, but I was talking about on your Facebook page, you were roasting some vegetables. And I look on that thing and I got so hungry.
Well, there's a trick to that. When knife skills are probably the most important aspect of the cooking process, not just the great ingredients, mm-hmm. but the person's knife skills. And you don't have to have very fancy knives. You just have to have one or two really good knives that are just, you know, not so expensive where it's going to break the bank. And I think that there's a wide spectrum of products out there today that most people can go out and spend $20 or $30 on a knife. And it's an investment in your own health, in a sense, because that's where the food is going to be handled properly, because mm-hmm. it's in the process of prepping food that gives you the end result. It's not so much the ingredients. You can get conventional good ingredients. You can get organic ingredients. But it's how you handle them, and it's the steps that you take to cook them. If things are properly steamed, if things are properly roasted, if things are properly sautéed and cared for. So it's in the prepping of the food, the cutting style, how each piece is the same size if you're going to, say, roast something so everything cooks evenly, and the timing, and those are the issues, and the proper heat. So if I'm going to roast, I know which one the thing on Facebook, I know which ones you're talking about. The vegetables are cut and prepped properly. Then I put a roasting pan in the oven at a high temperature, and I let the roasting pan get very hot.
Mm-hmm. That sound was the hot.
Right. So when the vegetables hit that hot pan, they're mm-hmm. already cooking. They're already coming up to temperature. Mm-hmm. Most people will just put things in an oven. They'll set the oven and they'll preheat the oven and mm-hmm. they'll put a cold roasting pan in. So now the oven is going to drop in temperature because it has to get the pan hot and it also has to get the food hot. So everybody's competing for heat. So I already have my pan in the oven hot, and when I put my vegetables in or whatever I'm going to cook, I don't have to lose that time of things trying to come up to temperature. That's just a very quick learning.
Oh, point. Well, I'm thankful for that tip because I've been cooking for a long time, and I've always not heat my pan. So thanks for that. If I didn't get anything else from knowing you, this was worth it.
and that sound, when you hear the sound of the vegetables hitting the pan.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. I said, I'm so hungry.
Which is a good indication because most people, when you're cooking in a professional kitchen at a very high end or wherever, you're listening to the food. You know, most people don't realize that cooking involves visual.
Yeah.
But it also it tastes, but you're also listening to the food, and you could tell where the food is in the cooking process just by listening to it. And lots of chefs work, and they have their back to the stove while they're doing something else. They don't have their back to the stove. They're paying attention to what's on the stove.
They're hearing.
They're listening.
They're hearing. Yes, Yeah, I can't wait to reach the status where I can hire me my own private chef.
Well, you know who to call.
So we going to work on that. Lord, from my mouth to your ears.
Right. I have to start to run here.
Okay, well, I am just so thankful. I want to give you, do you have 5 minutes to just summarize and leave
sure.
your closing thoughts
on Absolutely.
People?
Yes. What was the question?
I was saying just take the next 5 minutes to summarize your thoughts and leave with the people your contact number for those who want to get in touch with you.
Yes.
We can do this on the radio. We couldn't do it on the TV, but I'm just so honored that you took the time to be here. So closing thoughts, what do you want them to remember and tell them how to get in touch with you, please?
I would like, they can Facebook me. It's Daniel Lanzalotta, Lanzilotta, or I can be reached at 203-216-4446. I would like to leave with this thought. I would like people to start to change incrementally, not major. Every day, try to taste something different. Go outside of your ethnic boundaries. Go outside of your comfort zone. Make something at home. It doesn't have to be food. Go to a store and buy some supplies to make a shelf. Anything. It doesn't matter. So long as you do it yourself. Because I would like people to feel the joy. Because at the end of the day, you have to feel the joy in something. Otherwise, you're not living. I don't care where you come from. I don't care what skin color you are. I don't care what color your eyes are, your hair, the shape, your weight. I don't care if you're vegan, raw foodist, vegetarian, meat eater. I don't care if you're eating across the spectrum of the animal kingdom. It doesn't matter. I'm not the food police. But do it with respect towards whatever animal you eat. Try to limit how much you eat. Start to reduce how much you eat by increasing the better things in your life. And you could do this slowly. If you want to start giving up meat, start introducing more vegetables, flavorful vegetables. If you want to eat raw food, do it slowly. But every step of the way, always take the time and be mindful of trying to understand where the food's coming from, who made the food, who processed it, who the butcher was, who the vegetable man was, whatever. Mm-hmm. And just always take time to have a moment to enjoy what's happening in your mouth or in the process, what it takes to do the work. Mm-hmm. Even if, like you said, if it's making popcorn, make the best popcorn you can make.
That's
and
right.
Enjoy it. Don't
That's
over-salt
right.
it. Use
That's
brewer's
right.
yeast on it instead of salt or something.
Right, right.
And just... Don't sit in front of a television and eat.
Yes, that's
not
good.
Even if you're
going to
eat by yourself, sit at the table properly.
Mm-hmm.
Get into the ritual. You see, because food at the end of the day is a ritual.
Yes,
and
it is.
And we in the modern world don't live in rituals. We live outside of the ritual. And I'm not talking about the religious ritual, because food is a very big part of religions, too. But the ritual of doing things over and over again, if it's making rice, if it's making something, do it every day, but do it with intention that
right.
will prosper something, because you never know what's going to come from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to leave you with the idea of being mindful of what you do, even if it's making your bed or tying your shoe or combing your hair. Whatever it is, do it with respect. Find the best possible items you can do it with. Even if it's recycling something, if you have an old bookshelf, don't throw it out. Fix
That's
it
right.
up. Or ask somebody you know, do you have it? Just yesterday, Dr. Hudson, I went and I cleaned out the garage. I had a ton of stuff, and I literally took it across the street to these guys in Stamford who sell used furniture. And they were like, "You're just giving this to us?" I said, "Yeah." "They don't want any money?" I said, "No. I mean, it's doing no purpose, has no purpose in my garage.
What a blessing. Thing,
but you will have some purpose for it. And they took everything, and I had a whole truckload. I have a pickup truck. It was packed with a desk and stuff.
Beautiful.
And old
beautiful.
Computers and
beautiful.
All kinds of stuff. And now somebody else is going to have some use out of
yes.
it. Somebody's going to make some money. Somebody's going to use that stuff. And we have to get rid of going to the landfills and dumping
mm-hmm.
stuff. And don't buy plastic bottled water.
Yes.
These are the things everyone could be doing. And making, doing, creating for oneself, but finding the intention that's going to bring joy.
I must tell you that Jazzy 20 in the chat room says, great information on heating the pan. They love that. And they said that you are just a phenomenal person. You are great. Where is that again? You are great. So that was
thank
great
you.
Information. So that means that they give me the okay to have you back.
Oh, good. I am overjoyed to be back.
Yes, you know. So I'm just so thankful, and thank you for spending so much time with us here on the A New Day show. I look forward to being in your company again.
Yes, I would like to continue on.
Just give them your contact information again for all those people who want to take cooking classes or want to have you speak at their organization or
absolutely.
Anything.
I can be reached either on Facebook at Daniel Lanzalotta, DanielLanzillotta. I can be reached by email, themindfulchef@gmail.com, or I can be reached by telephone at 203-216-4446. And if I don't speak to you personally, please leave a message, and I will get back to you.
What's the phone number again?
203-216-4446.
4446. Okay. Well, thank you so much, sir, for educating us. And if anybody send any message to you on the show, we'll get that to you. And Jazzy say, yes, have to tune in next time. So Jazzy already has the front row seat for when you will be back. So,
well, I can't wait to be invited back. That's
I love you have an open invitation, but I'll talk to you to schedule you very soon because
very good.
This is good stuff. We need to take care of the temple here. So bless you, my brother, a new friend. We
thank
are
you,
on Facebook, so we will be seeing each other. And I just want to commend you on the amazing work that you're doing. Keep doing God's work.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. And
have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye.
Bye-bye. This was, I was on with Mr. Daniel Lanzillotta. And, oh, what an amazing gentleman he is. I tell you, one of the things that we didn't even talk about today, he has committed his life to over 30-plus years of vegetarian food. And you can look on his picture on the radio site. He said he's 50-something. And he said to me last night at the TV show, he says, oh, I am 50. I forget 50 what it was. And he says, I have all my teeth in my head and everything. And he was just joking. But you can just see that he is such a model of good health. And you know, what an investment to have somebody like this working with our young people, because our nation is suffering from obesity, and we need people like Daniel who will help us to turn this around. So again, I thank God for bringing him in my life. I'm glad I am somebody that likes to talk to everybody, because I just met him 3 weeks ago. I was in the TV studio and he walked in and I just got into a conversation with what you do and all of that. And last night he was on my TV show. Today he's on the radio show. And I am thankful that he took the time to bless us. So guest 442 and Jazzy 20, thank you guys for stopping by. If you have a comment and you want to call in, you can call 646-915-8166. Or you can call the toll-free number, and the toll-free number is 877-598-8549. And you can call either of those numbers if you have a comment about the show or if you have any questions and recommendations about what you have been doing pertaining to your eating habits and your choice of food. Just to share a little bit about my personal experience, is that back in June, some of you will remember me talking about my elevated blood pressure. And I tell you, I'm not someone who eats drunk because I am the daughter of a farmer. And I grew up on the farm in Jamaica, so everything I ate was fresh. To be honest, we never have a refrigerator. Growing up, we live in the country. We didn't have a refrigerator. So the water was in the clay jar, and it was rainwater that was caught off the zinc off the roof, and meat was pickled or smoked. So we didn't have any refrigerator. So we were accustomed to eat pickled things, fresh milk from the cow or the goats and all of that stuff. So back in June, as I began telling you, I went to the doctors and my blood pressure was hitting the roof. My blood pressure was so high. And I came home and I drastically changed the way I was eating. I must be honest to you, my downfall are the sweets and the gravy. And I tell you something, you know, in Jamaica they say when trouble take you, picnic clothes fit you. What that means is that when there is some anxiety in your life, you begin to focus on what the right thing is. So I completely forgot that I had bought one of those George Foreman grills way back when, the little ones. And I pulled that thing out and I began using that for the preparation of my food. Another downfall that I have is my portion control. And I pulled that thing out and I've made a commitment. I said, whatever cannot hold on this little grill is not going to be part of my meal. So I began cooking it on there. And the other thing my doctor says to me is that you need to take at least 20 minutes to have your dinner. At least, especially how you're eating alone. So I am back to sitting around my dining table and enjoying my meal. I'm not in front of the computer like I normally am, doing some work, working on some project, writing something. I am setting the time aside to sit and enjoy my meal. So I was so excited about the input from Danielle this morning and to help educate. One of the other things that I personally began doing is juicing. I'm doing a lot of juices with my vegetables and my fruits, and that's what I'm having. And I am so energized. I guess 442 and Jazzy 20, I don't know if you have any experience around the food or any struggles that you have with food. If you want to type it in here and just give me so I can share. But we all need to take better care of ourselves and what we put in our mouth. It does not cost a lot to eat right, especially over the summer and everything. If we just decide that we are going to go out there and just invest in what we put inside our mouths. I know yesterday I cooked something and oh my God, that thing was so good. I blanched some the top of the beets, the stalk and the leaves and everything. I blanched that with some a little olive oil, fresh garlic, fresh thyme, fresh dried thyme, came from somebody's garden over in Armenia, New York. And I blanched that with the top parts of the beets, the leaves and the stalk. And I put some turmeric in and it was delicious. I had that with some roasted sweet potato. I roasted it on my George Foreman grill. Now I have to go try and roast it in Daniel's style in the oven by preheating my pan. And then I had that with, I'm even putting my squash on that grill too. It's just so amazing the things we can do to enhance the taste of our food. So, okay.
I had...
Good morning. You call us on the air. Would you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yes, Atlanta, Georgia. My name is Jazzy Tweedy.
I think you're calling on a cell phone. I had a slight disturbance. You're calling from Atlanta, Georgia?
Atlanta, yes.
And what's your name?
Jasmine 20.
Hi, Jasmine. Thank you for calling. So, were you listening to the show?
Oh, yes. He's great. He's a great chef.
Oh,
really? The information... Yes, the information he provided was excellent. As far as the heating of the pan, I never thought of it like that.
I never did.
How often we
are waiting on the oven to warm up, and then we have the thing all covered, ready to put in the oven. That alone was worth the show.
Yeah, I agree.
And
the eating in front of the TV and all of that, that was worth it also, because I feel like we have gotten away from those small principles that
yes.
we were raised up with.
That's right.
We have away from that, and that's how, you know, we forget about how much we're eating because we're entertaining ourselves at the same time.
That's right. I tell you, Jasmine, it's amazing because I don't know how old you are, but I'm 62, going 63. And I was born in Jamaica, West Indies, and we didn't have a lot. But you know the one thing we did? We had a meal together as a family. And
exactly.
We talked together as a family. And this is what is missing in our nation now. We need to get back to basics.
Yes. And when he was talking about having the home economics and... school. To me, that was the most important class that I could ever have taken up.
That's
because
right.
Home ec taught you so much about even when you're cooking, you had to have
That's
discipline
right.
with one another. So that
That's
even
right.
taught you how to even work with people and have relationships with people
That's
working
right.
with each other. So that
That's
class
right.
to so many principles that now it's unexistible. You know, you don't even hear of it anymore.
No, and that's why, Jasmine, that's why the Montessori schools, I don't know if you have them in your neighborhood where you live in Atlanta, but that's why the Montessori schools do so well, because they have
yeah.
these little, the 2 and 3 year old kids in there. And these little kids doing everything for themselves. And they grow into meaningful adults. They don't sit around waiting with a sense of entitlement. Because you have 13, 14-year-old kids going outside to tell their parents, I'm hungry, Mama.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to go in and make a salad or make something for themselves.
Correct. And I agree.
You know, so we, I know down there in Georgia and for people in Florida, you're accustomed to have your own fruit tree. You can go out and pick your fruit. I remember growing up in Jamaica, everything we go out and we harvest. And honestly, I don't know if it's just me, Jasmine, but do you garden? Do you make a garden at home, vegetable garden or anything?
Yes, I have one, a very small one.
Let me ask you, here in Georgia,
we have farmers markets where you can go and get all vegetables free from all over the world. They carry different vegetables.
Wow, wow.
So all types of vegetables all over the world they carry at the farmers market.
Whoa, what part of Atlanta do you live in?
Conyers, right outside. It's like 20 minutes from downtown Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, I have a couple of friends living in Atlanta, too. Oh, it's amazing. I love, whenever I'm in Atlanta, I love to go up to Buckheads at the, Atlantic Fish Market, you know, the place with the big brass fish on the roof?
Yes.
Oh, I love that place. I go in, I buy my own fish, and they fix it, and I sit, and I enjoy it, and then I get my cab and go back downtown to my hotel. I just love Atlanta. Well, listen, Jasmine, I want you to, I thank you for coming. I don't know if this is your first time. Please don't let it be your last time. I want for you to mark the show favorite and connect with me so we can come keep in touch. Are you on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook at Sonda, S-O-N-D-A, Washington.
Sonda?
Yes, Sonda, Washington.
S-O-N-D-A, Sonda, Washington. So I will look for you on Facebook so we can connect up and I can see how I can add value to what you're doing. And listen, don't be a stranger.
I sure want, and thank you so much for the show today.
A pleasure. Thank you so much, and I look forward to you coming back. And please share the link with some people so that they can go listen and get some information about how to expand and improve on their lifestyle of food and eating.
I sure will. And thank you.
Thank you, my sister, and you have a blessed day.
And you also. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Yes, that was Miss Jasmine calling from out of Atlanta, Georgia. And I am so blessed that she took the time to call in, because a lot of times you really don't know whether or not the listeners are really enjoying the show. So I'm always so blessed when somebody takes the time to call in, because we are here to educate, inspire, and empower our listeners, entrepreneurs, and small business people. And you know something? We as entrepreneurs, sometimes we keep working, and we forget to nourish this temple that we have here. And I know that this information this morning was valuable, not only to me and not only to Jasmine, but to all the people who will listen to it now and on the archive. So I know that in order to be successful, we must take care of all aspects of our lives. If you are in business, or whether or not you are in business, you owe it to yourself to make sure you eat right. We must discipline ourselves as well to exercise. Don't wait like me when your blood pressure is high and then all of a sudden you say, well, I'm going to exercise. That's a mistake I made. I had not exercised for over maybe 30 years or something like that consistently. And I remember I used to play lawn hockey and all that stuff when I was home. So I'm not back to playing lawn hockey, but I bought myself a bicycle and I'm walking. And I know that this will help me. And I'm making sure that I eat right. So I pray that there's something that you have heard from here today, from Daniel Lanzilata. And I know that he is on a mission to change the way that we take care of our bodies. And I thank each and every one of you for coming again. So remember to mark the show favorite so that you can be informed when we are on and who we will have on as a guest. I am again excited. I feel privileged and grateful to have spent these past 2 hours with you. And as usual, remember, you were created for a destiny. In order to fulfill that destiny, you need to understand the importance of taking care of your temple that you have been blessed to have. And one of those ways is to make the right choice in food, consumption, and preparation, and to make time for yourself to sit and enjoy your meal. This is the Queen of the Empowered Soul saying thank you so much for joining us, and continue on your path. Do not allow anyone to deter you off your track. Love you, bless you. See you next week, same time, same place.
My destiny. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and pray.